Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, September 14th, 2012. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here by my co-hosts, Alyssa Ray and Elon Cohen.
Hey there.
Welcome, everyone. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the same rights that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. For our first main segment today, we'll be presenting a discussion on the myth of vegan purity. And for our feature interview today, we have filmmaker Martin Guinness on the show to speak with us about his recently released award-winning documentary film called Cages of Shame. This is a film that has been on my radar since I first heard about it earlier this year, and it's been named one of the top seven animal rights films of 2012 not to be missed. Cages of Shame is about the bear bile farming industry, specifically in China, which entails some of the most atrocious forms of torture and cruelty to animals that you would never expect such large and wild creatures as bears to have to endure and be assaulted by throughout their whole lives. I've been wanting to do a show on this issue for quite some time now, and we haven't covered it before, but it does deserve worldwide attention as a matter that I think most people probably have no idea exists. This interview is coming up in about 34 minutes, so please stay tuned. Now, we mentioned a few weeks ago that Elon is leaving us soon to pursue graduate studies at Oxford University in England, and with his depart, we'll have an opening for a new co-host and co-producer at the Animal Voices radio show, so I wanted to talk a little about what we're looking for to fill this position. So we are seeking a new programmer slash co-host slash co-producer to join our volunteer collective, and to apply for this position, no experience is necessary, but there are certainly some skills, abilities, and qualities that make for an excellent programmer and co-host, such as having strong research and presentation skills, public speaking experience and or ability, good time management skills, eager to engage in discussions on air, a diplomatic, peaceful approach to activism and outreach, and dedication to being a voice for the animals and passionate about animal issues. So if you want to know what kind of work this would entail, so we're asking that you would be able to attend at least two shows per month, and dates are flexible on that, and produce one show per month, and to have about 10 hours a week to produce that one show per month, to research for news and lifestyle segments and arrange and conduct 15 to 20 minute interviews, to help with some special events and fundraisers and with our promo, and to be an active part of the Animal Voices Collective, that is to say, demonstrating overall involvement in the progress of the radio station. If this position interests you and you think you might be a fit for the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, and please let us know more about you or pass it on to anyone else that you think might be interested. So, Elon, you had your animal rights workshop that you presented at the Victoria Anarchist Book Fair last week, and I'd like to hear all about that.
Yeah, definitely. So, over September 8th and 9th, I went to the Victoria Anarchist Book Fair. But for the week right before the book fair, there was something called the Festival of Anarchy. So, there was a bunch of different workshops and presentations and films that were going on during that week. So, on Thursday night, a bunch of folks went to go watch Maximum Tolerated Dose. It was being screened at Camus Excellent. Books in Victoria. And after the film, we chatted with Carl Olszakowski, the producer, who we've actually had on the show. So you actually go to our archives, you can actually find that interview that Alyssa did with Carl. And it was really interesting to hear and talk about, you know, watching it for the second time around. You really understand the suffering and the oppression that not only the animals face, but also the lab workers face themselves, the kind of emotional guilt and the turmoil that they go through, and how horrendous that really is. And that's something Carl also wanted to talk, investigate throughout the film. The following day, on September 7th, we had our animal rights workshop. It was really interesting and really fun. There were about 15 different folks there from different lifestyles, from vegetarians to vegans to people who identify as freegans. And for those of you who don't know, what freegans are people who, for instance, dumpster dive and get their food for free. And so they don't have so much of a choice. Exactly. They don't have so much of a choice whether they do or don't want to eat meat, for instance, or animal products. Some freegans also identify as vegans, but some of them, of course, just do it for the fact that they want to eat. So if they
There's so much food wastage. It's something that I think we should incorporate more in our society.
So some of the topics we chatted about were whether, of course, you know, this is a group full of anarchists. So everyone there, you know, wondered whether being vegan was in and of itself something enough to really sustain and really promote animal liberation. And there was kind of a general consensus in the room that, you know, being vegan is kind of like recycling in the sense that it's good and we ought to be doing it. But, you know, it's very hard to find any environmentalist who actually claims that, you know, recycling is the end point and that's all we need to do. It takes us out of that system from perpetuating exploitation and oppression, but it doesn't go far enough. So that's kind of a general consensus in the group. And I was really excited because that's something, sometimes an argument that is very hard to promote within the vegan community. So it's really great. But of course, having a room full of anarchists kind of helps us out with that.
Yeah, okay, so it's almost like saying consumerism, you know, can't change the world.
Exactly, okay. So we need to go beyond merely changing our consumption lifestyles. Now, that's not to say it's not a good thing, and definitely everyone was accepting that, you know, it is, of course, important. And just like, you know, being environmentalist, recycling is very, very important for the world we want to imagine in the future. But, of course, it's not enough to get to that kind of world. The other thing, of course, we chatted about was whether, you know, being vegan, of course, you know, when you buy soy, factory workers in soy factories, of course, suffer from respiratory failures all the time because of the dust from soy factories. And so there's a, there's a curiosity on whether being vegan and still consuming from factories that produce vegan foods was still something good. And of course, one of the discussion points that we brought up is that what's important to notice is not all factories are created equal. Statistics have actually shown that in areas where slaughterhouses prop up, when controlling for all other variables such as age, race, ethnicity, immigration, and other patterns of crime, it shows that about 180%, there's about 180% or so increase in crime rates in a community where slaughterhouses come up. So it's not just that factories are all equal in the sex, but in the sense that actually slaughterhouse factories promote that much more detriment to the community. And of course, they're also linked to an increase of violent crimes and sexual assaults within community. So that's, of course, something else to notice. So if you want to be in solidarity with factory workers as well, it's worth, of course, again, you know, consuming anything from a factory means we're causing suffering to somebody. But the fact that we would be doing it to, let's say, a soy factory worker as opposed to someone at a slaughterhouse is that much better. It's not to say it's good and, it's, you know, we're absolved from, you know, our purity of some sense. But, of course, it is much better. And some of the other topics we covered were whether the intersection between veganism and masculinity. That's something we've done on a show a while ago. You can check in our archives as well. And, of course, the reproductive rights of animals. Often we chat about in the animal rights community that we also spay and neuter our dogs and cats. And this kind of goes unquestioned. So there was a discussion within the group on whether, you know, what does it actually mean to treat animals with agency? And should we be spaying and neutering them? Of course, we do that to decrease the overall population, the overall suffering of the species. But what does it mean for the individual reproductive rights of animals? And that's kind of a complex question that I haven't really thought about before. So I was really thankful for the participants there to really raise those kind of questions. So it was super, super fun. I got tons of great literature at the Anarchist Book Fair. The Black Paw Print Collective had a table there of animal rights goodness. So I recommend everyone to go check it out next year. It's always in the first week or so of September. So it was in Victoria, and anyone that's in the Vancouver or the surrounding area in BC, or anybody that wants to come up from the States, I definitely recommend them to check it out. It's a fantastic opportunity to really network and get fantastic and great literature.
Well, that was a great report about your doings last week, Elon. Really into activism, but so was Alyssa. So let's hear what you were doing last weekend, Alyssa.
Not quite so in depth and didn't require much planning.
But really important still.
Yeah. But I showed up to the SPCA, the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, annual walk. It's called Pause for a Cause. It's their fundraiser walk that happens every year. And it was in Stanley Park. It was kind of a cloudy day, but it didn't rain. And there was lots of people and their canine companions And I've always wanted to attend that particular event because I think it's a great place for outreach about farm animals and extending one's compassion. And so I was happy that Liberation BC organized some leafleting there. I think a lovely woman named Mary Chris actually created a pamphlet specifically for that crowd. It was just lovely. It had it said, "You would do anything for your companion animal," and it had a picture of a calf touching noses with a dog through a fence, and it said, "Extend your compassion," and it invited people out to the Walk for Farm Animals.
Excellent.
Occurring at the end of the month, mm-hmm. and it went over wonderfully. We congratulated people at the end of the walk as they came into the finish line, and said we were asking them to keep walking with huge smiles on our faces. And people were in a really, really good spirits, excited about helping animals. So it was a great opportunity, and hopefully a lot of those people will come out to the Walk for Farm Animals at the end of the month. I also brought about 50 vegan outreach pamphlets as well, and I just left them in the eating area, sort of on the tables. I kept sort of scattering them, and I would see that they would be gone, and I kept sort of refilling them because there wasn't much of a presence like that there at the event. The SPCA does have a focus on farm animal welfare. They were actually serving at their food stall. They had hot dogs. They called them SPCA certified Smokies, and they also had veggie burgers. And yeah, so I just wanted to offer some education about that, and I hope I reached a few people.
Did you find that the reception was really good to the literature you were handing out? I'm just curious.
Maybe not in comparison to the general crowd. Yeah, I didn't really hand out the, I didn't really make personal connections with the vegan outreach literature. It was a pamphlet called Even If You Like Meat, and it was just about how much reducing consumption can help. And it had information about dairy and eggs and different animal flesh industries. And those ones I just left. I didn't really talk to people about. But the pamphlets about the walk, they were very well received.
Excellent. Yeah. I want to see more people out at that. Thanks
so
much.
Yeah, we actually handed out 400 that day. So wow. It was an awesome success.
Thanks for that, Alyssa.
Hey, you. Yeah, that's right, you. Driving in your car, listening to the radio. Don't touch that dial. Are you afraid to hear something new? Something that might make you think, or a song you haven't already heard 5 times today? Don't worry, we're here for you. We are you. We are Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. Now turn this up and keep your eyes on the road. Find a complete program guide at www.cooperadio.org. Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM on our new station, a CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Thanks, Elon. So, guess what happened last Sunday? Can you guess?
I can't.
It rained.
It did. I know. So sad.
So.
And it was sun on the Friday and the Monday.
I know.
And Saturday.
The one day we were going to have our wonderful event, our outdoor potluck at the park, it rained. So good thing we had a rain plan. Didn't think we were going to need it, but we certainly did. We made the decision the day before, like, it's definitely going to rain. We're going to postpone, as we had announced we might do if we needed to. So that means that people who didn't get a chance to attend our potluck that didn't happen last Sunday, September 9th, now have a chance to attend to the rescheduled date, which is this Sunday, September the 16th. So it's still going to be a wonderful time. It's presented by Animal Voices Radio, so your co-hosts will be there, and Raw BC is also presenting it, so there's going to be lots of good raw food there, I hope, as well. All vegan, of course. Meeting at the same place, so it's officially called John Henry Park, but it's everyone knows it as Trout Lake Park, and it's on the south side, the entrance to East 19th Avenue at BC Parkway. We had the large covered picnic area booked last week. Do we have it booked this week?
No, but it's not booked by anyone else. So
we may or may, so either find us there or find us right beside it. In any case, you'll see our banners. So please do come out to that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Everyone's invited to attend, and we encourage an environment that is welcoming and respectful of people of all eating lifestyles, sexual orientations, shapes and sizes, and ages. It is a family-friendly event. I want to emphasize that. It's also an animal-friendly event, so we ask that each person brings a vegan dish serving eight to share, plus your serving utensil, a plate, cup, cutlery for your own meal, and please bring an ingredients list for your dish. There's also going to be a raffle. We've got lots of great prizes. I want to thank some of our sponsors, book publishing company DeCapo Lifelong Books, Edward and Sons, which makes great vegan food, Eternal Abundance, you've got a gift certificate for that restaurant in town, Fairy Cakes, we've got vegan cupcakes there, Foods Alive, they make raw flax crackers and chia seeds, Gorilla Food, gift certificates for that, a raw restaurant in town, V-Dog, they make vegan dog food, we've got a big bag of dog food, and Zimt Artisan Chocolates, raw vegan organic chocolates. We also have a pink bicycle for a 2 or 3 year old, which I think is awesome. It's going to be great. A Frobo cold water bowl for companion animals, which is a really cool gadget. It keeps cold and it gives you cold water for your dog. So I think that's going to be awesome. There's a lot of other prizes there as well, and all those proceeds will go towards supporting Animal Voices. If you don't have time to prepare a dish, we suggest that you just bring some fresh fruit, which is always enjoyed in the summertime, or just come anyways. We just want people to come. We have about 55 people who have RSVP'd already. It's going to be a great time. If you do have any questions about the potluck, please email us, radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, and we do look forward to seeing you there. Elon.
Well, First Nations on British Columbia's north and central coast have banded together to declare that trophy bear hunting is banned in their territory, a move that could lock hunters out of an area twice the size of Vancouver Island. But the move to put bear hunting off limits in the Great Bear Rainforest doesn't sit well with provincial officials or BC hunting guides, who said only the government has the authority to make game laws. Our concern is that people without jurisdiction are unilaterally deciding something like this, said Scott Ellis, executive director of the Guide Outfitters Association of BC. But Chief Doug Nieslos of the Kitasu and High House Nation, himself a bear watching guide, said the hunting has to stop. Despite years of efforts by the coastal First Nations to find a resolution to this issue with the province, the senseless and brutal trophy hunt continues, he said in a statement released Wednesday. We will continue now to assume the authority to monitor and enforce a closure of the senseless trophy hunt. And when thinking about these kind of issues, it's always important to notice and keep in mind that BC is the only province in Canada that has no treaty. So, of course, even under Canadian and British laws, there is no way in which the government actually has jurisdiction in this area, because there were no actually official treaties made. So, of course, it is somewhat continuing this colonial project once the of course, the BC government says, the Guide Outfitters Association says that the First Nations people don't have jurisdiction to make these decisions, because we have to always have to keep in mind that it is their land and it is their territory that we're living on. And now we have a really great segment with Alyssa on the myth of perfect veganism.
Yes, we do. So actually, this came up because a friend of mine said recently that, you know, they were concerned that they couldn't use the word vegan and didn't want to proclaim themselves vegan or go vegan because, you know, they're involved in photography. And they, the film actually has some gelatin, as it does, uses gelatin as a coating. So it is, by definition, non-vegan. So I wanted to kind of go into purity and sort of discuss that. Can we ever truly wipe the blood off of other animals off our hands? Animal exploitation is so entrenched in our society that it's nearly impossible to avoid every animal byproduct. How can we remain true to our values of nonviolence and speak out for the rights of other animals without becoming obsessive and thus perhaps turning potential animal advocates away? So I wanted to start by just defining veganism. I know we do that from time to time on the show. So I'm going to go with a 1978 definition from the Vegan Society. which defined veganism as a philosophy and a way of living which seeks to exclude, as far as possible and practical, all forms of exploitation of and cruelty to animals for food, clothing, or any other purpose, and by extension promotes the development and use of animal-free alternatives for the benefit of humans, animals, and the environment. In dietary terms, it denotes the practice of dispensing with all products derived wholly or partly from animals. So the key words there are as far as possible and practical. And so basically, you know, we do our best. We have a commitment to not exploit animals. We believe in their inherent right to live free from exploitation, but we can't always live perfectly.
Now, Alyssa, when you say animals in that definition, do you also include human animals in there? Because for me, it seems to be my veganism also includes that. So for instance, when I go and buy chocolate, I make sure that the chocolate I buy is vegan. But in addition to that, I refuse to buy chocolate that isn't fair trade because I know the cocoa industry is particularly horrendous. So for me, chocolate that isn't fair trade is also non-vegan.
Interesting. I do. I try to keep that in mind more and more. I think, you know, I've been vegan for 5 years, and I think it's kind of an ongoing education. And as I meet, you know, more people who speak out about these things, so yeah, I'd say for the first few years, that probably didn't matter to me as much. I thought it was all about other animals, but I'm coming to see it as more a unifying stance against exploitation in general. So yeah, I appreciate people like you coming into my life to sort of push the barriers further, because it isn't just, you know, one thing. So some people think of veganism as an extreme lifestyle full of rules and restrictions. So eating not fair trade anything would be one of them, and, you know, nothing with animal byproducts or even things that use animal products in their refining process, like sugar or beer and wine. They use sometimes fish parts or animal bones or something like that. So it does seem sometimes really extreme, as if there's like there can be such thing as like 100% certified vegan. What are your thoughts on this?
I actually would like to read a little excerpt from this book that speaks exactly what you're talking about, which I just found. So this book is called Being Vegan, Living with a Conscience, Conviction, and Compassion by Joanne Stepaniak. I highly recommend reading this book if you want to find out more about this topic. I call it the Vegan Bible because it just answers all of these questions with such, I guess, authority. Like, I just believe, like, the author, she knows all. And so I would, and the way she just words things. So in addressing that issue, it says here, vegans focus on the larger picture and avoid the obvious animal products and byproducts, then being vegan becomes much more practical and attainable. There are hardly any food or clothing items for which a vegan needs to compromise because convenient substitutes are readily available. When there are no vegan possibilities at hand, most vegans can simply do without. Making non-vegan choices when animal-free options exist is not vegan. An individual can still practice the central tenets of veganism even though basic compliance has not been yet met. However, technically speaking, this person would not be vegan, she says. So she or he might be transitioning to veganism or be a total vegetarian, because vegan is a descriptive term that is neither favorable nor pejorative. Interpreting vegan as positive or negative is a personal judgment. The word itself is neutral. And she also talks about, you know, it's about doing the least harm and being, there's a lot of questions in this book, like, as in the question, can I use film? And I couldn't find the answer to that in here, but she's got an answer for that. And basically what I remember reading from this book is you do what you can, and we're always on a path, just like you were saying, Alyssa, is people like Elon have brought opened your eyes. You know, you've been practicing vegan, but, you know, fair trade chocolate, for example, there's always more to grow. It's self-growth.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's what it's about.
Yeah, I see it that way as well. It's I think a lot of people think that, you know, if they start using that word one day, then they have to throw away everything that they have that isn't vegan, and, you know, dump out their fridge and then not go out to dinner with their friends, and like their whole life is going to change like all at once or something. And it's really just like, you know, is this issue important to you? you can make vegan choices every day. And like, I think that's what it is we make mostly vegan choices. We try to keep these issues in mind. And I identify as vegan. That doesn't mean I'm 100% or every choice I make is vegan. I like the word because it helps me have integrity with my values. It's saying I'm trying to live by my values as best I can.
Which is what ahimsa is. Doing the least harm.
Yeah. So actually, I wanted to talk a little bit about that sort of aesthetic value. So ahimsa is a moral tenet of the Jains, and that's an Indian religion that prescribes a path of nonviolence toward all living beings. All traditions of Jainism unanimously accept and believe in the core Jain philosophies, and one of the major values is for nonviolence. Jain monks and nuns actually walk barefoot and sweep the ground in front of them to avoid killing insects and other tiny beings, and they're vegetarian. They don't even eat root vegetables because that kills the plant. Even Jainism acknowledges that it's impossible to discharge one's duties without some degree of violence, but it encourages followers to minimize as much as possible. So that's like seems extreme to me, and I have a lot of respect for it, but that's not what veganism is. Like, it is what veganism is, but that's not how
that's
we in
point,
this room
that's
live.
That's one point like, on the spectrum.
Yeah,
we see it as being extreme, but then I'm sure there's people that see me and you and Elon as being extreme, and we don't feel that way. So perhaps the Jains don't feel that way because they're used to carrying a broom with them and covering their faces with a mask all the time so that they don't breathe in organisms.
Yeah.
It's all relative.
Yeah,
definitely. But, I mean, it is important not to view it as a form of, you know, suffering whereby I have to give things up. You know, and a couple of weeks ago, we did an interview with Sarah Brown, who's the author of Queer Vegan Food. And, of course, this is kind of a big idea behind her blog is that, you know, we don't try to find substitutes. It's not that, you know, oh, now I can't eat meat, so I have to find meat substitutes, right? It's not a one-to-one transition. Rather, what her blog does, and I, you know, I'm very thankful for these kind of projects, where it's, you know, we find food that is in and of itself vegan, doesn't require any substitutes, and it's like fantastic. So things like a cabbage sea veggie sandwich, for instance, which has no substitutes and no meat options for it, and it is in itself entirely vegan, and of course you can indulge in it. And of course a large part of that for me is, you know, finding food that I can indulge in and not viewing veganism as a kind of dietary choice or kind of a healthy lifestyle. Of course, it is healthier, but for me, I don't view it that way. For me, I view it as more so a focus on non-human and human suffering. But for me, you know, I think reading about fat-positive veganism is really encouraging and positive to seeing people who really are vegan and really indulge in food and really like food and opening up that access towards being a hedonist with food. Because, I mean, I do identify as a hedonist when it comes to my veganism.
I hear people say all the time that vegans love food. Vegans are talking about food all the time, and vegans are always taking pictures of their food, which I certainly identify with.
Yeah, and not only food, like fashion and, you know, face products and makeup and everything like that. I think some people think you can't buy anything in the drugstore and, you know, you have to give everything up that you know. But there are so many alternatives that you just don't know until you make the commitment and then you discover.
Yeah, they're usually of higher quality too, just like beauty products and food and that.
One thing I really appreciate that one of my mentors, Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau, says, she did a podcast about the myth of vegan perfection, and I really liked her point that she thinks that what's restrictive really is fear-based living, shutting off from the truth, closing one's heart to other animals' suffering, and living based on habits of the past. That sounds like a restrictive box to me, and veganism is actually quite the opposite. It's opening up to the unknown. It's opening up to the horrible truths out there, but then it's opening up your heart to greater compassion and love. And I see sort of, not taking that step as living in fear and taking the step as living in love.
I actually have an excerpt that just speaks perfectly
to
that. Veganism, in all its simplicity, provides a highly sophisticated path for personal development and inner growth. It summons us to explore our deepest resources and concede our strengths and weaknesses. A vegan lifestyle is not for the faint of heart nor slight of spirit. It requires courage, dedication, and willingness to dig deep inside to discover our greatest promise. It allows us to affect the positive changes we yearn for by actively implementing them and by being an abiding example of the peaceful world we envision. And I think that says it beautifully. It's reaching into your soul on a deeper level. And perhaps, as you were saying, Colleen Patrick Rougeau says, people are often scared to do that.
And, you know, for anyone who does feel like they are suffering within it or they feel restrictive, I recommend them to find out a vegan community. Oftentimes it feels that way, that it is restrictive, because sometimes we feel alone or isolated in our veganism. And so, you know, when we go out with, for instance, meat eaters, we feel, oh, you know, we don't have these options that they have, and et cetera, et cetera. So I really recommend people to find vegan communities, find potlucks, go to events that are vegan oriented, go find a food non-bombs in the city you're living in, and find other people that are vegan and have such a love of food that can really inspire you, because the optimism that other people have in the community they can generate around it is really, really inspiring.
Come to our potluck this Sunday, because there's going to be a ton of delicious vegan food there and like-minded people. And these events are actually really great, I mean, for community building and meeting people, which is the reason why we're putting this on partially, is for community building and just to share great food with others that no animals had to suffer for.
Yep, definitely. So when it comes to things like rubber and tires or chewing gum and matches and antifreeze and baseball gloves and instrument strings and drum skins and medicine and photographic film, we do the best we can. We make choices with our values in mind, and maybe we make some not so great choices now, but we learn to make better choices when there are alternatives available, and we can, you know, live the vegan path. It's a journey. So I have a few events to share. Speaking of reaching out in the community, local group No Whales in Captivity is organizing a demonstration outside the Vancouver Aquarium in solidarity with the simultaneous protest at Marineland in Niagara Falls, Canada. This protest will happen in Vancouver on Sunday, October 7th from 11 till 1. They need people to hold banners and hand out leaflets about aquarium cruelty. Please bring lots of friends and family to help stop the cruel capture and display of marine mammals in both of Canada's whale jails.
I think I'm going to go to that one.
Excellent. Yeah. I think I will, too. I have like an hour lunch break, and I'm going to bust over there and go back to work.
Maybe I can give you a ride.
That would be great. So they have a few banners. Aquarium visitors, don't buy a ticket. Your money fuels the cruel capture of whales and dolphins. Aquarium staff, tell the truth. 8 Marineland whale trainers quit and expose the cruelty. What are you waiting for? And aquarium directors, you are responsible. You brought 3 dolphins from Japan, fueling the annual dolphin slaughter. And I have another event, of course, coming up. I want to mention, as I did at the beginning of the show, that it's Farm Sanctuary's Walk for Farm Animals. It's a series of animal fundraising and outreach events that take place in cities all across the U.S. and Canada. It's an opportunity for those who want to help farm animals and who are concerned with the cruel and horrific practices of factory farming to take a stand in support of compassion for all. The walks raise vital funds for Farm Sanctuary's life-saving work and bring together thousands of people to promote kindness towards animals. And this year's event in Vancouver will be the biggest ever. You can register at walkforfarmanimals.org. It's at the Vancouver Art Gallery, September 29th. That's a Saturday. Mm-hmm. The walk will be held, rain or shine.
Alyssa and I will be there.
We will be there.
And it's always a lot of fun. It's great to be able to march through the streets of downtown Vancouver and be loud and proud about our fight for farm animals.
Yep, yeah. Definitely. I'm almost at my goal. I think I'm about 300. I love fundraising. Yep. So that's it. That's all I have.
Great. So you are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM, our new station, or new channel, actually, at CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, unceded Coast Salish Territories, Canada. This week, South Korea is hosting the IUCN World Conservation Congress, and the World Society for Protection of Animals and local partners Green Korea United are urging the government to seize this chance to demonstrate global leadership by 1. Announcing an end to farming within their own borders, and 2. Supporting an international agreement to end bear bile farming globally. The horrors of the bear bile industry, where bears are slaughtered at age 10 and their gallbladders harvested for use in commercial products, are well documented. Now, sadly, while South Korean bear farms are thought to hold 1,000 Asiatic black bears, only 20 are estimated to survive in the wild. The World Society for the Protection of Animals Bear farming expert Chris Gee states that the government has no excuse. Research conducted last year revealed that while just 1.2% of South Koreans say they have purchased bear bile, 89.5% are against the farming and slaughtering of bears for bile. And for those of you who are readers of the New York Times last week, the op-ed columnist Nicholas D. Kristof told a story about his high school friend, Bob Benson, a third-generation dairy man who earns a good living running a farm that is efficient but also has soul. In his piece, Where Cows Are Happy and Food is Healthy, Kristof sees the potential for family farms to prompt positive environmental and ethical reforms in American agriculture. Benson, the farmer, claims that for productivity, it's important to have happy cows. If a cow is at her maximum health and her maximum contentedness, she's profitable. I don't even really manage my farm so much from a fiscal standpoint as from a cow standpoint, because I know that if I take care of those cows, the bottom line will take care of itself. But of course, it's always important to keep in mind that agribusiness perpetuates a dirty, mean, and exploitative and environmentally deleterious practices, because executives' definitions of the best way to farm is always driven by competitive pressures and the bottom line, read most profitable. They are in a business to make money and, driven by the logic of capitalism, will likely act heartlessly or at best faux conscientiously so long as it produces a profit.
I would think that a dairy cow would be most happiest if her baby wasn't taken away from her every time she gave birth.
Definitely. And for those of you who are actually interested in this topic of locavorism and, of course, the new obsession with eating local and humanely raised meat and dairy, it's definitely worth checking out our archives on our website. We had an interview with Vasily Stanescu on his paper that he actually called Green Eggs and Hams. It actually touches on this very subject of locavorism and whether we can still be ethical and eat locally for the environment and for animals.
There's also that great website, humanemyth.org.
Well, thank you for that, Elon. Today's feature interview is with multi-award-winning filmmaker Martin Guinness. He is the producer, director, and editor of the documentary film called Cages of Shame, which just came out this year and tells the story of bear bile farming in China and the mission to save 10 bears and close down a bear farm. This picture won the Humane Society of the United States ACE Award this year and has been named as one of seven can't-miss films of 2012 by Veg News Magazine. Martin hails from Australia and is here to speak with us today about the film Cages of Shame and the bear bile farming industry. Hello, Martin, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Hello.
The bear bile farming industry is one form of animal exploitation that I think is not very well known at all worldwide, yet it's such a terrible situation for the animals who are involved. You made a film called Cages of Shame to expose the truth. As a filmmaker, I'm interested to know what brought this issue to your attention to decide to make a film about it, and how did this film come to be?
I've been making films for a very long time. I've made lots of arts documentaries and adventure films, etc., etc. I suppose in recent years I've been very much interested in humanitarian causes, and I can't remember now actually where I saw the information, but as soon as I found out about how these bears are treated, it just totally horrified me, and I thought, I really, really have to try and do something about this to bring it to other people's attention. And I set on a path to make a film, and actually took a few years, but eventually got the film made.
And can you speak about how your involvement with the group Animals Asia Foundation came to be and how they played a role in telling the story that you decided to document about bear bile farming and the rescue of 10 bears in China? What did that entail?
There are several countries where bears are used to extract the bile. The main country is China. Mm-hmm. The other major country is Vietnam, but there are several other countries, South Korea, Laos, etc., etc. Animals Asia is the only organization in China that actually rescues bears. They also work very closely with the government in terms of closing down so-called bear farms. So ultimately, they were the people to go to try and work with to find out about the situation and also talk about what can be done about it.
So stepping back a bit to explain the issues at large, I'd like to talk about the practice of bear bile farming. The use of bear bile in traditional Chinese medicine has been happening for centuries, but the bear bile farming method, as it is now, only started in the 1980s. Can you speak a bit about the history of this and how it came to transform into what it is today?
Yeah, sure. As I understand it, as you rightly say, bear bile has sometimes been used in traditional Chinese medicine. What people have been doing over the years was to actually try and capture a wild bear and kill the bear and take out the gallbladder and then use the bile from the gallbladder and leave the rest of the bear in the wild. Maybe they take some other parts, but basically that was it. And I think the Chinese government felt that they were decimating the population mm-hmm. of wild bears in China. So in a kind of positive mood, what they tried to do was to say to people, all right, it's okay if you actually, rather than actually killing these bears, if you actually keep the bears, keep them alive, but take the bile from the gallbladders, which I suppose...
logistically makes sense if you're... Yeah.
But there is a very old saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and sadly, right. these bears live in a living hell. So that's how bear bile farming came about. And the bears are kept in horrible, horrible conditions, which I can tell you more about. There are two methods of actually draining the bile. Mm-hmm. Predominantly in China, the bears have a catheter or tube permanently inserted into their gallbladder, which is sort of tapped or drained every so often to take out the bile. In Vietnam, it's a slightly different process where they actually knock the bears unconscious with a drug called ketamine, which is actually illegal in Vietnam, but they still use it. And then they search for the gallbladder, sometimes with an ultrasound, and they puncture the skin of the body of the bear in order to find the gallbladder and drain it with a syringe that way and a tube.
So
I should say, by the way, that as well as Cages of Shame, which is about mm-hmm. bear bile farming and rescue in China, there is a sister film which is called Moon Bears: The Hidden Truth, which is about bear bile farming in Vietnam.
So getting back to the method of extracting the bile, that's what you were talking about is called the free drip method, where they have the hole in the bear's abdomen to facilitate the flow of bile. How long are these bears kept in these cages for in these conditions, and are they in these cages like all the time during the farming process?
Yes, they are. What they tend to do is to capture the bears as they start out by capturing the bears as baby bears, as cubs.
Right.
And they keep them in very, very small cages.
And they're easier to control at that age, I would imagine, and to
break their spirits. They can transport them easier mm-hmm. across borders because now they're having to find new bears in other countries. So as you say, they're easier to control. And they can put them in the cages. A moon bear, these are all moon bears, basically, occasionally a brown bear, but mostly moon bears, can live up to the age of about 30 years, our 30 years. And they will keep these bears in these tiny cages where they can barely move
right.
for the whole of their lives until they die. So that's, you know, you talk about a period of about 30 years, if they're lucky.
How many bears are being used in bile farming in China and throughout the world, as far as your knowledge knows?
They think that in China there are somewhere in the region of about 9,000 or 10,000 bears in cages. I don't know if you want me to talk about the condition that the cages are. You know, I mean, they're horrible. It's not just they're like zoos.
They're tiny from what I've seen, and ever since I saw a picture of that years ago, it's always been in the back of my mind that this is an issue that people need to know about, so please do tell us.
Sure. Can I also say, because I don't want to turn people off completely, I think it's important for people to know about this subject, but it's also important to know that something's being done about
it. Sure.
You and I can talk about that. But just to set it up, just so we know what we're talking about, the cages have bars on the bottom. So the bears are kept in a condition where they can sometimes barely turn around. And their paws are constantly on bars. They're never on solid ground, especially on, they're not on earth or anything natural. And so their paws get, damaged. They obviously have nothing to do and they're not very well fed. And as a matter of fact, in China, they're often starved before they're actually, the bile is taken out from them. They are psychologically and emotionally damaged to a huge extent. So the conditions are appalling, absolutely appalling, apart from the actual process. It is like a living hell. In fact, the original title for Cages of Shame was Living Death, but we thought that would turn people off too much.
Well, I think that's definitely an accurate description. It's like they are, the people who are facilitating this are keeping their bodies alive, but yet they're just acting as these medical extraction, objects is what I could,
that's
is how
nice.
I would describe it. And Animals yeah. Asia founder and CEO Jill Robinson describes bear bile farming as a barbaric mutilation of an endangered species. I guess that's something else to consider, is that these bears are endangered. Is that right?
They are now, yes. Because of the bears that they have captured. Of course, they're basically in cages. So, maybe since you mentioned Jill, she mm-hmm. and her organization Animals Asia do an absolutely fantastic job, specifically in China and Vietnam. They have a bear sanctuary in each country, and what they do is just an amazing job. The first thing they try and do is to work with the governments of both countries to try and eradicate bear bile farming.
Right.
That's obviously the main thing, and their main job is to try and close down the so-called bear farms to prevent this from happening. In the absence of that, what they do is to work with the bear bile farmers themselves and try and free the bears from, you know, get the farmers to release the bears into Animals Asia's sanctuaries. And as a matter of fact, Cages of Shame, actually, we go through the whole process of a rescue mission. The mm-hmm. film basically is about a rescue mission to go and rescue 10 bears from a bear farm.
And that's a great story to tell, I think, because it shows some positivity at the end.
Well, apart from knowing about these horrible facts, right. The film is exhilarating in this respect because having set up that the conditions that the bears live in, we're able to see exactly what can be done about it. It's awful to know about these things, but it's actually, in a way, joyful to know that something can be done, that bears can be rescued and can be released into a sanctuary where they can live very happy and very contented lives.
I know Animals Asia has been successful in rescuing over 300 bears in China from this industry. I'm wondering if you can describe from your experiences of what happens to the bears that they rescue. How are they rehabilitated and how do they live after being rescued from these lives of torture and tiny cages?
Yeah. In both cases, in Vietnam and in Chengdu in China, they have these large sanctuary areas where during the day the bears go out and they walk on in unnatural surroundings and grass, and they have trees and things like that. So it's close to their natural habitat. In addition to that, what they do to encourage the bears to be more active, because obviously these bears have lived for many mm-hmm. years. You know,
they don't know how to be active. They don't know how to walk even, I would imagine.
No, that's true. That's quite true. In some cases, they don't even. And of course, they're so damaged psychologically that
they sometimes
don't even want to come out of their dens.
Right.
But they do encourage them, and eventually they all do come out, and they learn to play. which is amazing.
Something they've been deprived of their whole lives, but it's something innate in them because they're doing it, right?
Yeah. So what they do is they hide little tidbits of food. They create sort of toys for them to play with and things for them to climb up on. And they hide little bits of food to encourage them to go looking for these things. Mm-hmm. And the natural instincts of the bear take over, of course. And it's wonderful to see these amazingly playful, suddenly they're playful bears, well not suddenly, but they become playful bears, and exercising and having all kinds of exciting times. So that's during the day. At night, what they do is they create dens for them. While the bears are out on the grass during the day, each den is cleaned. They have full supervision, etc., and refreshed with more food and with more stuff. And the bears sleep in a sort of man-made den at night.
So getting back to what the bile is used for in the first place, it's traditional Chinese medicine. I'm curious to know exactly what in this medical practice is it used for, to cure, to treat?
Yeah, it's there's meant to be a wide range of uses for it. It's like many traditional medicines. Nobody's very specific about it, but sometimes it's to do with body heat, and maybe it's to do with organs like the liver and kidneys. Whether or not it's effective doesn't really matter, because I've talked to traditional Chinese medicine practitioners. As a matter of fact, in the other film, in Moon Bears, about Vietnam, we actually interview a practitioner on camera. And what he says is, there are synthetic alternatives. There are natural alternatives to bear bile. It may or may not work, but even if it works, there are better alternatives to use. It's absolutely unnecessary. Most traditional Chinese medicine practitioners do not use it. They prefer to use alternatives.
So what do you think is needed to stop this horrible practice, and what do you foresee happening in the future for the bears and in bear bile farming? Do you think that it will eventually be eradicated in China? And what about educational efforts such as, for example, making this film to get people to stop the demand for the product, and also the work that Animals Asia is doing in China?
Yeah, well, really, you said it. I mean, it's about education. It's about letting the people in China, first of all, know not to use bear bile.
Right.
That's the first thing. And strangely, people don't connect the dots. Actually, selling bear bile in China is illegal. You're not officially allowed to sell it, but that doesn't stop people from selling it. So what you try and do, what Animals Asia tries to do, is to educate the people of China not to buy it. And obviously it's a supply and demand industry. If people stop buying the product, people will stop selling it. And certainly then they will stop having the bears, because even though they don't feed them very much, they still have to care for them. So the ultimate thing is to close down all of the bear farms, and Animals Asia is working very, very hard to do that. It's a matter of time. It's a matter of education. There is an awareness developing now. In fact, ironically, there was a company in China only 2 or 3 months ago issued an IPO to try and set up a public company to sell bear bile, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. But this produced a major reaction, because suddenly it came into the awareness of the Chinese people. And they realized actually what was happening, and that bear bile is a bad thing. And it actually helped educate people in China more than many other things could have done. But, you know, the more people get to watch Cages of Shame, the more the word spreads, and the more the energy kind of percolates through to society. Hopefully something will be done about it.
Well, that's how change starts. And I wanted to ask you, how can people see the film? I know it's been being played, I believe, at film festivals, but, and I understand you have international broadcasts that will be happening in the future, and you also have plans to have it available via online streaming. So maybe you can share just some ways on how we can see this film in the future.
Sure. Right now there is a website, cagesofshame.com, www.cagesofshame.com. People can go to that. They can see all about the film. There are even a couple of short films on there, trailers about the film. The best way, so we're also building a website where people, where we can actually stream the whole film.
That's excellent.
And we're just in the process of finalizing that right now. In the meantime, if people want to know when that's up, the best way for them to do that would be to go to cagesofshame.com. And as it were, the thing on Facebook.
I've done that.
Then we'll have their details, and we can let them know directly as soon as the film is available to be streamed online.
And
hopefully, it will be on television also
next year.
That's a matter of the broadcasters licensing it.
That would be fantastic. Thank you so much, Martin, for coming on the show today to speak with us about the film Cages of Shame and the bear bile farming industry. To find out more about this film, please visit cagesofshame.com, and to find out more about the work that Animals Asia is doing to end bear farming, you can visit their website at animalsasia.org.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, unceded Coast Salish Territories, Canada. Next week on the show, we'll be doing a feature-length interview with Peter Daniel Young. For those of you who don't know, Peter Young is an animal rights activist indicted by a federal grand jury in 1998 on charges related to fur farm raids in Iowa, South Dakota, and Wisconsin in 1997. Peter is also the national spokesman for the Animal Liberation Front. So if you're curious about the ELF, people who have done these kinds of property destruction actions, and what it means to be a vegan in prison, and people who have spent time in prison, then definitely check out our show next week.
He's a great speaker. Definitely recommend.
Definitely. We here at Animal Voices Show modestly ask you to keep connected with the Animal Voices, that's us, via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, or you can join us, and you can actually join us, at Twitter, at Animal Voices YVR. Please do send us your suggestions, comments, criticisms, whatever you think we ought to be accountable to our vegan and non-vegan community here, either on Facebook, or you can send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Please also do check out our website at animalvoices.org, where all of our past shows can be downloaded. And if you appreciate the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices, please do show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio, because we do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. To make a donation, simply go to coopradio.org, click Donate Now, and don't forget to indicate your favorite show. That's us, Animal Voices. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thanks for listening to Animal Voices today. And we do have a show. It's Total Liberation by the animal rights band True Nature. Thank you.
change, show your dedication through your words and your actions. Together we can end our suffering. Total liberation. Total liberation. Pass out your walking on, buy into authority. Toughness and ability, resources are running out. Disconnect us, we're not free. Oppressors acting out of greed. Fashion and equality are both necessary. Reject the myths we are taught to believe. It's time to program ourselves. Necessary old types and traditions. Follow no god, no master. Look at the root of racism, sexism, speciesism, and you'll see it's all been fabricated. Keep us apart. Break down the barriers that enslave us all.